Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studio where you'll hear a conversation about presentation design, strategies, tips, and tricks, running a design studio, and more. Here are your hosts from inside the design studio, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, this is Troy Collar, co-founder of TLC Creative Services, Inc. We're located in Southern California near San Diego.
And I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Well, hello, Nolan and Sandy. I've got a question that I get from a lot of newer designers or designers going out on their own. What do you call your work area? As example, we went back and forth over the years. You know, was it our office, which I kind of felt was stuffy? Was it our work area? Again, it just didn't really feel creative enough. We've settled on it's our design studio, and we actually do have a studio now, you know, a studio with a lot of designers in it and stuff, but that's kind of what we've landed on. What do you call it? More of a curiosity question.
Well, I guess I'm the boring one then, or stuffy, because I call it my office. That's just what we've called it all these years. It's funny because Nolan and I were just talking about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I call my office as well. Although it's the third floor, it's a finished attic, a very large space, the entire third floor of our house. And one person came over and saw it and said, "Oh, nice man attic." So it's called the man attic occasionally.
I have been fortunate enough to visit Nolan's awesome new home, and I have seen his man attic design studio office. Also, the orange is Yeah, it's PowerPoint orange, Sandy. It's
awesome. Interesting. I'm sure very tastefully done.
It was it's orange and white. It wasn't because of PowerPoint. Orange just seems to be my color of this decade that I seem to be liking.
That's your race uniform color too, isn't it?
It's my race uniform when I do triathlon, so people can pick me out. So I like it.
Very good.
And I was very excited. I was in Paris last month, and I went into the store and I saw orange shoelaces. So I got some orange shoelaces.
Jumped on that.
Yeah. Fantastic. Hey, side note on Paris, we just got back, enjoyed it thoroughly. And while I followed your photos of your mother painting along the Seine River and everything else, you know, we were there during the wettest May on record since 1908. Which means that we didn't go to the top of the Eiffel Tower because it was sitting in a cloud the entire time.
Wow.
And the river, while we were leaving, we actually took photos of it rising. It's now at, like, not record levels, but it's non-usable. It's really amazing.
Yeah, so you got out just before it really crested.
Wow. Yeah, we've seen photos. Literally watched it. Amazing. Yeah. Hey, so what exciting things are happening in your studio, man attic, office this week?
For me, this has been the week of random print work. I'm doing a women's health clinic poster. Interesting. A medicinal eye drop physician survey result report, a grant proposal guideline document, and a designed press release for some type of online commerce company. And I asked them what exactly they did. They admitted they couldn't really explain it.
Oh, that's hilarious. But
yesterday I had a meeting with a very large agency for a visual rebrand that I might be doing, which could be a really big matzo ball for me. So and different, which is good. So I'm excited about that.
That is awesome. And so, a little different
a
conversation. That's not a problem at all. It's funny. I have a number of print projects going on as well. We have this big trade show booth that we've been working on, and the booth graphics were approved now, which is exciting. And they're printed, you know, by a large format print vendor. So we got those going. We have a postcard size invite for a private event that company's putting on. And I just had a conference call going over the details for the next WWE wrestling collector poster in the 2016 series that we've got the contract to be working on. So a lot of print stuff actually in our world as well.
Well, I only have one print project, and that's a user guide for PowerPoint. So I don't know, it's still related to PowerPoint. But my big project this week, and I think it'll go into the next few weeks, is a complex interactive presentation that leverages custom shows, triggers, embedded objects. You know,
those are so fun to work with.
They are, actually.
They're a little frustrating because they don't always do everything you want.
No, but I really enjoy it.
No.
That's true. Hey, on the user guide, because you're calling it a print piece, how are you developing it in PowerPoint? And is the deliverable a PDF or a printout, or is it InDesign, or how?
What you said. I'm building it in PowerPoint.
Okay.
And then they will deliver it as a navigatable PDF.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Very cool. We've been doing more or less a presentation style guide and user guide into a lot of the larger corporate template rollouts. So that, because everybody gets the PowerPoint template or they have access to PowerPoint, so we've been combining that information flow directly into the presentation. So even though we're setting it up like print design, that's our delivery vehicle. Sounds just like you. Nolan, take it away with news.
All right. So what's been going on the last week or so? Microsoft released its first Office Insider fast release for the Mac version of PowerPoint. So let me back up a little bit and explain what all these releases are. So if you subscribe to Office 365, which you should, it's where everything is going, so get on the train on that one, you will get automatic updates, or very often they'll tell you. I mean, they won't force it on you if you're on the Mac, but they'll tell you, hey, there's a new update. Now, those come out regularly, but you can actually get access to two levels of even quicker and more sort of advanced features if you want. And the way to choose that is if you're in PowerPoint, you want to go to help and go to check for updates. And once you're there, actually, you do have the option whether you want your updates to be manual or automatic. Automatic just means it's checking and it'll give you an alert. It'll say, hey, it's available. It's not going to install it for you. But then below that, there's a checkbox for join the Office Insider program to get early access to new releases. So this is a way for Microsoft to test out new features and new things before they send it to the entire world. So you can kind of become, you know, kind of a pseudo beta tester for Microsoft in this way. And then within that, there are two levels. There's the what they call Office Insider Slow and Office Insider Fast. And depending on which one you're on, you're going to get new things quicker. So they just released the first sort of update for the fast track. It can get a little confusing, but if you're the kind of person that always wants to have the latest, I would definitely go in and check those updates.
I think those are the terms for the Mac version, because they just released this. Because on the Windows side, I'd have to go back and look to see if it, but it used to be called Standard Release and First Release, which was the Office Insider program. Do you have the Mac one installed already?
I do. Yep. But what is new about it? Sorry, can't tell you.
Oh, well, there goes that conversation.
Yeah, so this one, they did not, they were not explicit, and I just haven't done the research to find out what it is. They tend to not be too forthcoming. Not that they're trying to keep it secret, but they're just not very good at publicizing specifically what's new.
Right. So, hey, I got a newsworthy thing, and this is actually pretty cool. I know I mentioned this to Nolan yesterday or the day before. He doesn't follow WinBeta, which is a website that I follow every now and then, or I kind of check in on. It's all about Windows information. But they had this really awesome article recently, and it's called basically, it's an article that lists the top 10 job skills that are in demand for high level positions, not entry level. And PowerPoint is actually in the top 10. I mean, right along with ability to communicate corporate organizational structure and goals and everything else. So it actually says Office application proficiency, and then it has an asterisk next to it that specifically calls out PowerPoint communication skills. I will put a link to that little article. It's pretty crazy story that
Troy,
I just found.
Question for you. I didn't read it, but when PowerPoint communication skills. So are we talking about understanding technically PowerPoint or how to use the tool to communicate?
No, it talks more about how to use it as a communication tool. So
excellent.
It lists them off in the top 10 and it has little bars that say, these are the ones that are more proficient. So first of all, it's in that top 10 list of everything they're looking at from a corporate level, positioning executive level positioning type of thing. But then it calls out PowerPoint, and I'd have to open it up again. It was like right at number 4 or 5 in that list of top 10, but it's about how to communicate using the Office applications, not the technical proficiency, but like, how do you actually build a presentation that tells a story and communicates and gets a result? Not, hey, how do you make a gradient that's a perfect blend from one color to another? It's a really just, you know, in the world of news, it popped up this month and it's kind of cool stuff. I will actually put a blog post about it as well, just to kind of highlight it. But in the show notes, I'll include a link so everybody can see it, because it's kind of cool.
Great. Also in news, Shutterstock has released a new plugin for PowerPoint, currently only on the PC side. And we'll be talking a little bit more about that, but you can go get that. I just had a conversation with some of the biz dev people at Shutterstock, and I'm going to be putting up a blog post probably later this week all about that plugin. And Shutterstock is my stock site of choice, so I was very excited to see that.
Well, did you my news is I wanted to ask you guys if you had a chance to read Nancy Duarte's blog that came out a couple of weeks ago entitled The Meeker Method.
I did not.
I have not. Where just so everybody knows, I will put a link to it, but where do you find Nancy's blog?
You know what? Good point. The link is on, I followed it via LinkedIn.
It's actually duarte.com/blog. You can get it there.
Thank you.
You know what? I see it through LinkedIn as well. That's why I was asking, because I didn't know where to just punch it in to find it on the web. Exactly. We'll put it in the show notes.
You know what? It's interesting because it concerns me a little bit. The article, the blog is about justifying Mary Meeker, who is the presenter, her slides, her cramped slides, because of her great delivery style. And I get what she's saying. I even give some of my really great presenters a pass with some of the slide choices they make. But with someone as highly respected as Nancy going out there, I'm a little bit concerned about the industry taking some steps back. She's made such great strides in bringing us forward. And here's my concern. There are presenters out there who maybe think they're good presenters, and they're going to start using their slides as a crutch. So I don't know. I think it's a step back.
I will have to definitely go look at that and read through it, because there are great presenters. There are great presenters that do not need speaker support. I mean, at all. They're just compelling and fantastic. But I think we talked about this last time, is the audience can't separate reading everything on a slide, if that's the type of slides we're talking about, and a kind of paraphrased delivery, because it's a focus issue. So it's more of about a person, the psychology and physiology of, you know, what the audience is doing at the presentation. So
yeah, exactly. I just think it's a shame to see great speakers using bad visuals or bad production techniques or anything. In my training, I show a number of slides from a deck from the CEO of Whole Foods, who's a great speaker, but he delivered this presentation years ago on organic foods, and they are just textbook example of how not to design charts and how not to design slides. They're just awful. And again, he's, you know, if you're a great speaker, everything about, you know, your presentation should be great. If you're going to invest so much time and energy in putting together a good speech, invest some time in your visuals, I think.
Absolutely.
Especially if you have the money and resources to do it.
Okay. I agree. But Nolan, I want to move to you. Aren't you presenting this month at an event in New York?
Next month, actually. Speaking at the second annual Point Made Presenters Network. It's just a one-night get-together for presentation folks in New York City. We'll have a link to it. It's July 19th in New York City. I'll be speaking. Fellow PowerPoint MVP Ellen Finkelstein will be speaking as well, and a couple of other people. So it's a good night. Come out, drinks and hors d'oeuvres, and just get to... If you're in the New York area, come on down. It's really the only opportunity to meet other New York presentation folks.
I had to get that plug in for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's great.
I want to hear about it.
I have to decide what I'm talking about.
Oh. Hey, well, speaking, Nolan, you mentioned the Shutterstock plugin.
Yeah.
So kind of along the lines of royalty-free images, I'm just going to throw this out as more of a random question. What is your preferred so as the group, preferred resource for stock photography? And Nolan, you kind of said yours.
Yeah, I love Shutterstock. I also pop to some others occasionally. I'll use Creative Commons. Recently, I pulled a bunch of images from a site called deathtothestockphoto.com, which is a really beautifully curated but small group of images. They release new images, I think, every 2 weeks. But they're Creative Commons actually as well.
I didn't know about that. I'm going to check that one out.
Yeah, they're really, really nice.
Just based on the name, I've got to check it out.
Absolutely. And I go to the mall too. By default, I don't know. It's easy for me to go to Big Stock. And I know you have to be really picky. They've got a lot of images, but there's a lot of junk on there.
You get comfortable with what you're comfortable with.
I'm comfortable with the payment. You know, I pay. I don't use a monthly subscription because I'm not convinced that I use enough photos. To have a monthly subscription. I pay by the image still. Mm-hmm. And I'm comfortable with that.
Well, there's a reason behind the question, not only because Nolan mentioned it, but
you mean self-interest, Troy?
Well, a little bit. I'm kind of evaluating right now. So I think a lot of people here, you know, listening in have a preferred option and will be curious what other designers use. I am. But, you know, I've subscribed with an annual plan for our design team to use on projects for, you know, at least 6 years. And it's fluctuated, been a couple of different resources. So we've used a lot of the big services out there. For the past few years, we've had a subscription to ThinkStock, which I really like. It's the culmination of it's owned by Getty. So it's a bunch of Getty images, including a bunch of the editorial, the news images, which is great to be able to get access to, and a whole bunch of other services all kind of rolled into one. But that's a subscription. But that subscription is going to come up for renewal in a few months. And just like every year, I kind of start thinking and looking and seeing what else is out there and checking on pricing and number of downloads and login options and all those details. So I'm kind of considering other options right now. And nobody mentioned it. I'm kind of leaning towards Adobe's new one, the Adobe Creative Cloud option called Adobe Stock. Very creative name. I looked at it last year, but they didn't really have a team login option that made sense. And now they've added one and the pricing is literally about the same as what I'm doing right now. And it just looks like a good option. So I'm kind of weighing what's out there and what I want to, you know, put budget towards this year.
I haven't explored Adobe, that much and I should.
Well, and what it is they bought another service, which I can't remember the name of right now. So they basically didn't just say, hey, we have, you know, 4 million images. They bought a service, rebranded it. And last year when I got a lot of information about it, it was still, although it was great, it was obvious that it was still being tweaked to work with the Creative Cloud. And now they have a good option. So, you know, it's something I'm considering or weighing. I will say this about ThinkStock, and it's difficult for me to pass up. It is owned by Getty, so you have a lot of really good image offerings. Mm-hmm. And there are Vector, there are Raster, there's a lot there. But it is images only, no video or audio or anything else like that.
I used to have a subscription to ThinkStock simultaneously with Shutterstock, and it just ended up being, I just didn't need all that. But I like ThinkStock as well.
That could be redundant. I could see that. You know, the big deal is that a lot of them have the daily limit, which is hard when you're in a team environment. You know, we could have 9 projects going on simultaneously where we're downloading images. So ThinkStock does offer, but not publicly list, a 750 image per month option. So no daily limits to deal with. And what that is just the normal daily limit times 31. And you come up with 750 images. So you could download 200 images in a day, which is awesome. But if you call them, I'm not the one that told you about it. Just for reference.
Well, Shutterstock is actually $750 a month now. They've changed their model.
Oh, really? That's
so
good.
I think that's public. And I like it too, because you're right. Some days you need more than 25, other days you don't.
Right. Nolan, how much is that?
On a yearly basis, I think I've 1300, 1400, okay. Something like that.
Okay.
And I'll throw this thing out because I personally, I don't like to think about buying images individually because what if they don't use it? Do I want the high res? It's just, I just want it to be there. I'm the all-you-can-eat buffet kind of person.
I know.
But what I used to do with my clients, because it's an expense. I mean, it's a significant expense. It's a cost of doing business. But I always wanted to pass it on to my clients. So what I used to do was add a line item into every invoice for stock imagery. And I just say, you have unlimited stock imagery, $200. That if, you know, whether you use a little or a lot, it's unlimited. And it was a way for me to sort of pass on the cost. I stopped doing that just because it just became a headache. And I just, right now with all my clients, I tell them, you have unlimited stock imagery as if you hire me, which is a nice selling point. And for me, it's just, a, again, just a cost of doing business.
Yeah, that's a whole topic is how you build for stuff. Because we used to do that. I mean, I come from the days when images used to cost significant amounts and you're paying, you know, $350, $400 per image. And, you know, and then you got the DVDs where you could buy 10 images for, you know, $500, $600 and you try and use those images to make
all
sure
the
you recoup your investment. But, yeah, we do a similar line item and it's for our larger clients. Smaller clients, we just say you have access to an unlimited resource within a range of use. So it's cool. Oh, the Adobe stock, they've also, that was one of the big things. They have the 750 image per month option as well, which was a big change they've made within the last year. So I'll let you know what we end up with, but you know, we always need some sort of resource because there are, you know, projects and imagery and visuals help put them together.
Is it comparably priced?
Yeah, you know what? They're almost, well, the problem is I think I'm grandfathered into a little bit of a legacy price point with ThinkStock, because I know last year I had to show them, or the new account rep, I had to show them the original contract so I'd be renewed at that same rate. So even they've upped their price, but I think they're all very comparable now. I mean, you know, it's like shopping for a car. If you go look for a Honda Accord or the equivalent across the brand, across the industry, they're all about the same price point because they know they got to compete with one another. Just my personal thinking on it. Hey, let's move into our topic. PowerPoint Desktop has always had the ability to run third-party add-ins to expand its tool set and capabilities. Today, we're talking about design productivity add-ins and what we personally have installed on our computers and some real-world examples of when they're used and how they're used. So let's start off with a little bit of what add-ins do you have installed on your primary design computer?
Well, believe it or not, for me, it is zero because I'm on a Mac where I do 95% of my work. This episode is going to be geared mainly to PC users because that's where most add-ins live. There are a few add-ins here and there for the Mac. However, when I do switch to my PC, which I have to do on occasion, the ones I use there are PowerPoint Extreme and Text to Outline. Those are the big ones.
Troy, I know you are the king of add-ins, but I have a few on my desktop. I use NX Power Lite also. I love Text to Outline. I've raved about it in several podcasts already. I use Shams Motion Path Tool and Color Swatch. Mm-hmm. Have to use the Color Swatch. And Steve Rinsberg's PPT Tools add-in. And I did just download the Shutterstock. In addition to that, the Picket add-in, which is similar to Shutterstock, but I think their photography options are much more limited.
And I've got to check out the Picket one. I haven't looked at that. So
that's actually available on the Mac.
Oh,
yeah, it's
even
one of the few.
More interesting then. Definitely high on my list of things to look at. You know, I'm kind of a productivity junkie, and add-ins have been kind of my long passion in PowerPoint. And I think it kind of stems from, you know, I started off in Flash and doing a lot of interactive design there. And with Flash, especially back in the day, it was all about, it can do a lot as far as a program. It still can, although it's been renamed now and, you know, the use of it's so much more limited. But it was all about finding modules or preset action script elements. So when I went to PowerPoint and started recreating a lot of that, it was kind of a natural to start looking for what to do there. But anything that saves clicks, speeds up design time, makes my life easier, I'm good with. And currently I have installed on virtually every design computer in TLC. We have two add-ins from PP Tools, the starter set and the image export. Then we have the Tools 2 add-in. We have the Zebra on Wheels add-in. We have Shams Motion Path add-in. And we have NX Power Lite. Those are the ones that are across the board everywhere. I run a few extras, additionals on my personal design computer. So really quick, just to get this out of the way, are any of us add-in developers? Do we have any affiliations? Do we get a percentage of any of the add-in developer sales? I want to make sure that people know, you know, what's our disclosure slide, you know, at the beginning of every Pharma Talk, what it is, where we're coming from.
No, I buy add-ins to make my life easier. I have been very limited, been involved in commissioning an add-in for client needs, but I don't do any of that work myself.
The term VBA makes my head hurt, so I have no concept of how to create them, and I'm certainly not getting any money off them.
I am just totally a power user. I will say, as a tidbit of trivia, I went to the very first, what is now the Presentation Summit. It was under the PowerPoint Live naming back then. I went to the very first one, the inaugural one, and it wasn't so much for the presentation work as I looked at the list of presenters and who would be there, and I just wanted to meet the add-in developers I've been talking with for years. In addition, I wanted to know how to pronounce Sham's name, which I now know as Sham, not the way I was Shyamar. Pronouncing it in my head.
Yes.
So yeah, just a power user. So no disclosures to reveal.
Speaking of PowerPoint Live, my first presentation summit was PowerPoint Live year 2. You presented on add-ins.
I did.
Yes. And that was eye-opening.
I'm actually doing this. Well, we'll talk about later. But yeah, this year I'm actually doing a little bit along the lines of this episode topic as one of my talks that I'm doing. So anyways, thank you for remembering that. That's exciting.
Well, that was before my time.
Give an example, Troy or Nolan, give an example of one add-in, or tool with an add-in that makes you a faster designer.
Sure. I use Text to Outline. And we've talked about this before, but it's an add-in it's free on the PC that allows you to take a text box and convert it into a PowerPoint shape that you can then recolor, size up and down. So a couple weeks ago, I was working on that reality TV show pitch, and we had our title treatment was done in a script non-standard font. The client wasn't going to have that font, so I converted it to an outline all within PowerPoint, giving me an instant shape that I could then recolor. We used it on all over the deck in different slides and different sizes, so it just became a shape. I could recolor, I could size up and down without losing any resolution, and I didn't have to go to Illustrator, I didn't have to go to PowerPoint. I just did it all in PowerPoint fairly quickly, and saved me a lot of time.
And that is, I think, on the evolution of PowerPoint and usability, is that we can do so much more directly in PowerPoint now than we used to. Meg, we got to make an episode about that, you know, design techniques that you can now do inside PowerPoint.
Absolutely.
Let's see here. An example that lets me be a faster designer. I got a great example. It's on the tools two, which is tools and then TOO as in tools also. They have a tool called the straight line tool. I'm trying to move my mouse over it right now so I can figure out what the name of it really is. And what it does, it's make line horizontal and make line vertical. You know, when you're making a line and it snaps to a connector on another shape and suddenly it's 99% vertical, you know, it's just off that little teeny bit. And then you waste so much time trying to make it straight. It's just an annoyance. And it's those little things that slow you down. This is a really cool coded little add-in button. Click the line, and there's only two options. Make it completely vertical or completely horizontal and ignore any connector points. So you got that one, like on an org chart, and one of the boxes is slightly taller, so the horizontal line isn't quite horizontal. You select the line and click the make horizontal, and bing, it snaps it right to the 0 degree instantly. So makes me faster.
That's cool. Awesome.
If you don't have the add-in, you know the manual workaround for that.
Probably not, because I only use the add-in.
So if you're lying, because this happens even if you're not dealing with boxes, if you just want to like draw a horizontal line, very often it won't be truly horizontal. It'll be like just a half a degree up or down,
exactly.
Right? And you just can't, and you're like with the mouse, what you do is you go to your format tab to see the dimensions of it. And if you draw a line, let's say it's a 4-inch line, it'll show 4 inches wide, but if it's not perfectly horizontal, it'll show like 0.02 inches high.
Oh, yes.
And then so you just change that to zero, and then it automatically makes it perfectly horizontal.
I know we're not talking about grievances or things that bug you in PowerPoint, but I'm going to add this to my list, is that on the format tab, the height, width, they're not tab. You can't jump to the next one. You have to like put zero and hit enter and then select the next one, the width, and then change it. So like if you want to make a circle, a perfect circle, you should just be able to put in two tabs so it becomes 2 inches and then go to the next one. But yeah, I did know that. It's just a pain. But I guess if you don't know it, you'd spend a half a day with the mouse and yep. the shift key and ways. It's just a way to make things faster. It's just a button.
Sure.
So Sandy, what do you use? What makes you a faster designer?
I use Color Swatch, which doesn't – I get – it
Shams one?
Yes, Shams Color Swatch. Thank you. It makes me faster, but I should add that it gives me an ability that I could not do without it, and that's when I'm building templates, I have the ability to add custom colors to PowerPoint's color theme.
That's great. So it automatically, as you select individual colors, it just automatically creates a new color theme, new color palette for you?
Yeah, more or less. I would encourage anyone who builds templates to use it. So every once in a while, a client's graphic guidelines include a color palette of secondary or tertiary colors. So I'm able to add those in a custom color dialog.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very powerful. It's basically doing a bunch of VBA coding for you behind the scenes. Echo, who is the master of template and back-end stuff, does it all with by going into the XML and coding it. Mm-hmm. So this
just doesn't add it to your standard, what is it, 6 or 8 color swatches. It gives you additional ones.
Yeah. It does.
Wow.
A custom palette will show up somewhere between your theme colors and standard colors on the color dialog or drop down.
So speaking of examples, let's do another one out, throw it out there. Give an example of one add-in that extends PowerPoint, or in other words, it lets you do something that you can't do if you just were to install PowerPoint and use the native PowerPoint.
So I haven't used this in a while, but this is another one from Sham. He has something called Live Web, and that allows you to create a box on a slide that it's a portal to a website. So it basically throws in this kind of browser window. And what it allows you to do is if you're giving a presentation, you want to show a live website in real time and maybe even demo and click around, you can do it without exiting out of your slideshow or alt-tabbing to bring up a browser. So and you can do it in any size. It can be a small window. It can take up the whole size of your slide. So it gives you a window into a live website. Obviously, you need internet access, reliable internet access, but it's a nice, smoother transition if you want to show something live.
It is actually, when I said there's other ones installed, we have a whole bunch of add-ins that are they're installed, but they're not active. So if we want them, and that is on every computer. I used to use it also for inserting Flash. It was a really awesome, I think it was the same one, Live Web and the Flash insert.
There were other Flash tools that have been, that are now
so
a moot point.
The one trick with this one is you can't make it full screen, because if you click on the web page inside your slide, you've taken the focus off of PowerPoint and now you're in the web page environment. So you could fill in forms, you could navigate around the internet. But when you try to advance your slide, you have to have some way of going back to PowerPoint. I always made it like 90% the size with a little frame so I could move my mouse and click on PowerPoint slide just on that outer edge to get the focus back there. Let's see here. I guess for things you can't do, you know what? The Tools to Make Same Rounded Corner tool is amazing. And I know I use this as my pro tip just in the last episode, but it's truly an amazing solution to a completely frustrating limitation of PowerPoint. So here's a quick example, if you didn't listen to the last episode. You have, as an example, you have three rounded rectangle shapes on a slide, and they're all different sizes. What that means is that PowerPoint automatically recalculates the size of the corner, the rounded corner. So each one of those shapes has a different corner radius, or they have a different size rounded corner when you're visually looking at it. And PowerPoint itself does not have a way to get an exact number for the corner radius. So if you, as a very picky analytical designer want everything to be perfectly balanced and equal, it's frustrating because it's mainly a manual guessing process of moving the little yellow adjuster to try and get them visually the same. With this add-in, I select those three rounded corners, being very mindful of which one I select first, because that is the one that's going to become the rounded corner master. So I select the first one, I select the other two, I go to the Tools to Add-In tab, and I click one button, Make Same Rounded Corner. Instantly, all three shapes have the exact same rounded radius on their rounded corners. It is just magical and something you cannot do in PowerPoint.
I definitely have to add that one. But I'm going to mention another Shyam add-in, and that's his end position tool.
Oh, part of the motion path ones.
For motion paths, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It years ago, I used to sit there, I would have a motion path, and I would need to match up my next animation with that end path. Yep. And it took forever nudging and moving and it was just really, really tough. The only thing I wish we could do is add a resizing ability to that.
The grow shrink?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I know exactly. I feel the pain on that one. So Nolan's maybe before, because you're on the Mac level. But you know, in PowerPoint now, how when you put a motion path, you click on the element and it kind of shows you a ghosted image of where it's going to end.
Right. That actually,
it's
helpful. And it's also kind of can be a little annoying.
Well, it didn't used to exist. It used to just be a dot. You didn't know where it'd end unless you animated it. So now PowerPoint's gotten better, but the motion path puts a copy of that element in that end position. So I think it's even more powerful as an add-in now that you can kind of visualize where it's going to be.
I used to use it when I did a lot more animation. I just haven't these days.
The self-running presentations, you have to have it.
Yeah. So do we count the QAT as an add-in?
Oh, I say yes, because it's customization of PowerPoint, and that's what add-ins are, is customizing PowerPoint. It's just happens to be an add-in.
It's built in.
Yeah.
It's PowerPoint. Now, of course, I'm gonna have to complain, because Mac 2016 still does not have a real QAT customization. We had it in 2011, and they took it away, and they keep promising, it's gonna happen. We still don't have it.
Well, what do you have in your QAT that's not easily found in the PowerPoint ribbon?
I have animation pane there. It always seems to disappear on me. And I don't want to click too much to click around too many clicks to get it. So that's there. I also have pick up and apply style with that eyedropper. This is sort of, it's related to the format painter brush, which is always there, but the pick up and apply eyedropper it's a little mysterious. Honestly, I don't know if any of you can explain it to me. It doesn't always work perfectly, but a lot of times you can pick up a shape style or text style and apply it to something else, but it's always there. So once you pick it up, you know, half an hour later on another slide, you can apply it.
Or on another presentation, as long as you're in the same instance. Yeah, it's got a lot of...
But it's a little tricky. It doesn't always work. I don't know why.
Well, mysterious was the perfect word for that, because I don't use it regularly because of that. I haven't quite figured it out. But basic alignment and rotation tools, I think that's key. I have that on there all the time.
Those are the ones I probably use most often.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's productivity, because to get to the rotation, you've got to either select another tab along the top ribbon, or you have to, and in all of them, you got to drill down a couple of levels into kind of sub menus. You click on it, you go into the the align and what are they? I don't have them in my memory right now, but you got to click on the align, and then you got to go onto which you want the rotate options and everything else.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's under rotate.
That's my biggest frustration on the Mac, is because now every time I want to align something, I have to click two or three times into menus deep, and it's really killing productivity.
Yes, it's all about productivity, and I said that's...
And a tip on the QAT, I put my align tools smack in the middle of my toolbar, because literally that is generally the shortest distance for my mouse to travel.
There you go.
Yeah, that gets tricky with, Microsoft kind of changed the spacing on the QAT there for a while and really threw things out of whack. But
they fixed it.
Yeah, it's fixed. And I'm very happy about it. So it's funny you mentioned the animation pane. I have a blog post within the last, maybe it was last year. So I mean, just last year, I discovered that there was an animation pane, you know, to open and close the animation pane QAT. It was like a, it was one of those, you know, the clouds opened and I went, oh my gosh, how could I have never seen this? I actually made a whole blog post about it just saying, I found this amazing tool and I got like, you know, 100 emails. Well, of course it's there. So, but that's a good one. Hey, so things that don't, this was one of the ones that got me because I do so much in the pharma realm, subscript and superscript text for, yes. You know, it's just a way of life in that world. And those buttons don't exist on the new ribbon. So when PowerPoint 2007 came out, I looked through all the ribbons and I couldn't figure out how to do it. Now, fortunately, I know the keyboard shortcut for that, but I like, you know, if you're in a mouse world, I like using the mouse. So mm-hmm. I added those instantly to my QAT. Those were probably the first customizations I did, which was adding a superscript button and a subscript button, just because it's very painful if you're working in a world that uses those and they're not really available. So, I mean, I had those as buttons back in PowerPoint 2003 and their own little custom toolbar. So those are two big ones for
the ribbon. We should point out that when you go to customize QAT, there are like different categories. The default is popular commands. Yes. And you can select all commands. And there's one of the options that is literally called not in the ribbon. And these are a series of functions that literally are not in the ribbon. Now, some of them can be access through multiple level dropdowns, but there are a few, as you pointed out, Troy, that literally cannot be accessed unless you add them to the QAT. Years ago, when combine, or now they call it merge shapes, was first mm-hmm. introduced, you could only, it was a pretty powerful tool, but you could only access it if you added it to your QAT. It was kind of hidden. And the story is, as we've been told, was that when they released the feature, the development team was kind of split on whether it was ready for prime time. So they compromised and said, well, we'll include it, but we'll hide it.
We'll not tell anybody.
It was stealth coding.
Yeah.
Yeah, stealth coding. Yeah, all so right. There's a lot so, there.
Yeah, so on the QAT, how do you set up and customize it?
Well, at this point in the game, the easiest option is just to cheat. You can install a customized QAT, which is just an XML file on PowerPoint 2010, 13, 16, for Windows. So everything but 2007, basically. PowerPoint 2007 is when they introduced it, and it was just really limited, and I don't think they ever updated it. So there were no shortcuts for building it out. But I know that both myself and Nolan have downloadable custom QATs on our blogs. Just go there, download it, follow the instructions, and in less than 5 minutes, you'll have a custom QAT ready to use. For the PowerPoint blog, my blog, I just did an updated QAT post this month on June 2nd, and it also has a preset downloadable QAT.
And if you get a QAT you really like, you should download your own version of it and keep it somewhere safe, because if IT comes in and wipes out your machine or you have to reinstall PowerPoint, you're going to lose it. So it's a nice way to not have to rebuild it from scratch again.
And that's a good point, Nolan. When I train when I train on PowerPoint, I help people set up their own QATs. I suggest that very same thing.
So under the customization pane down at the bottom right, there's something that says export QAT or import. So that's how you do it.
Exactly. I used to do it manually. However, I've used both of your QAT downloadable, your custom QATs. I've downloaded both of them.
Ah, no charge.
Hey, I've downloaded my own.
Me too.
I sit down at, you know, I'm going to work at a corporate environment, or I'm going to do a show where they're supplying the computers, and suddenly I realize there's no QAT. So I'll just hop online and download my own and install it right on that computer.
So remember my ethical scenario a couple episodes ago? I had an art history professor that wanted me to like make a slideshow of thousands of slides, and he thought it was going to take, you know, days of manual labor. So it never ended up happening. But since we're talking about, you know, add-ins, they basically allow you to work quicker and in some cases do things, you know, with the touch of a button that would otherwise take you hours to do. So here's a question. How do you invoice a project for something if you're using an add-in that you know will only take you a few minutes or, you know, dramatically faster than it would otherwise. And the client doesn't know about this add-in.
You know, I bill hours. So if I come in below estimate, I guess that's my loss, the client's gain. And I don't do that 100% of the time. But like you said, it's a good, for a good discussion. Troy, how about you?
That's a good question. So have you heard the story about the old mechanic, you know, the old guy that goes in to fix this huge industrial age machine that no one else could get running? So this amazing old man comes to the factory, goes to the giant machine, pulls out of his wooden, you know, tool chest or, you know, toolbox, a hammer, and just quickly whacks it twice and everything starts working, gives the manager a bill for $2,000 on the way out the door. The manager says, hey, you only work for 2 minutes. The old man says, hey, it's $100 to show up and $1,900 for the 15 years experience to know how to fix the machine that you guys were, you know, letting go to waste. I guess I have a kind of similar approach, is that I know how to use the tools to be the most efficient. You know, so when we do estimate a project, it's done in terms of design time. So I submit my estimate. If I can beat that estimate that everybody has already agreed to, everyone's good with the project invoice. So I wouldn't say I bill like how long it would take if I had to do that extra 300 clicks because I didn't have a tool to do it. But I will also say that my estimates are based on using add-ins for faster design time. Everybody on our team, you know, uses the same tools. We all work at a very similar pace and everybody uses the same things. So, you know, the estimate kind of already accomplishes that.
Right. I agree. That in general, that's what I do. I take the hours into consideration. I work in little extra just in case. Plus, there's this value that I'm bringing.
I think the real problem might be is that, you know, the value of the work might be looked down upon a little bit. Like, wow, you only needed 2 hours to do all that work. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, maybe we should just be doing it internally. Or, you know, why did this other designer, this is the one I've gotten before, is, man, this other designer charged us 2.5 days to accomplish that design. Like, well, they may not have been using an image export or an image import option to, you know, automate that whole process. And, you know, we kind of accomplish more within that span of time. But yeah, exactly. It could take that long if we're doing it all manually. Mm-hmm. So there's always that thinking of others type of scenario or next project scenario.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Well, how much do add-ins cost, or what's your budget for when you guys are putting together a production computer?
I don't really have a budget. I mean, they're fairly cheap, all things considered. I think probably the most expensive set out there is PowerPoint Extreme, which I'm not sure we've mentioned yet. That's close to $400 for the whole set. It's about 5 or 6 different modules. You can buy them all at once or individually. But other than that, they're either free or, I don't know, $20-$30.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I look at it as time is money, so I don't have a budget. On the other hand, I haven't run into anything that I thought was outrageous.
Yeah, I think the internet's changed things forever. You know, today someone can get a full set of add-ins for almost nothing. When I started designing slides, I used to half jokingly tell the client I was able to work faster because of, one, experience, but also, two, is because the $800 of add-ins I was running for the, you know, $200 program. Now there are just more options out there. Many of them are just free. I mean, completely free. The Zebra on Wheels tool add-in toolbar is free. You can just go there, download it, and it has some incredible options in there. It would be hard to spend more than $150 on everything installed on our computers today. So I don't really think it's a big expense anymore. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I agree. What about add-ins? Well, we've touched on this a little bit for PowerPoint, Mac PowerPoint, mobile, web versions. Do you guys have any apps?
Yeah, they're very, very few, as I said. There's that Picket stock imagery one that's sort of a similar to the Shutterstock one that was just released. Picket's are just a lesser known image house. So that's available on the Mac. There are a few others. If you go into the app store on your toolbar, you'll see what's there, basically. It's under the Insert tab. If you go to Store, you can sort of browse around and see what's there. Those are kind of the Microsoft-blessed apps that are in their environment. On the Mac side, there's kind of a newish standalone app though called Presentation Font Embedder. I'm not sure if we talked about that before, but you can find that on the Apple App Store. We're confusing, not to be too confusing with the terms. And I have a blog post up about that. That allows you to do something similar to text outline on the PC, where you can take text and convert it to imagery or actually embed fonts the way you do on the PC, if you choose to do that.
You know, well, I can honestly say I haven't used any on the Mac. There's just not anything really there, and it's not my main design platform. But I don't know a whole lot about mobile and web app or PowerPoint online, but the line is becoming really blurred here on what an add-in is. You know, we've really been talking about installed add-ins that add or extend functionality. There's these new ones, like you were just talking about, Nolan, that are by Microsoft, and they're in the Office store, and they call them add-ins as well. They're really kind of a new class of add-in, and I'm not really sure that add-in is the correct terminology. I think even the Microsoft developer teams are kind of struggling with how to label them. But basically, they're mini apps that are accessed from within an Office application. So as example, if you're in PowerPoint, they're not going to be on your toolbar. You go to Insert and then My Add-ins button. Is it the same on the Mac, Nolan? Is that how you get to it?
Yeah.
So it's not like it's a separate button. It's basically bringing up another application, and it'll show you a list of all these little mini apps that you have added. And for the most part, you have to be on an Office 365 account, except for maybe like the Apple Store standalone one. So as example, I have a little Quizmaker mini app. It's kind of neat. But it's not nearly as robust as like Articulate or what's the other? Oh, I'm blanking out. What's the other?
Poll Everywhere?
Not a Poll Everywhere. No. That's a quiz making. No, there's another. I'll come up with it. But anyways, it's not nearly as robust as like an Articulate, a full standalone add-in application. I also have a pretty cool little word cloud builder that's, you know, you find it in the Office store. It's an add-in. There's that new Shutterstock add-in. And all these, what these all do is when you click, it's several buttons. You have to click Insert, you have to go the My Add-ins button, and then it brings up a little dialogue that says, hey, here's all the ones that you have available. And you could go search for more on the Office store, which is nice to have a central location. But when you click it, it opens up an action pane on the right, which is basically running a mini application. Now, there's a few things about them. You have to be logged into an Office 365 account, and you have to be online to use them. They're not standalone elements. You know, they rely on being connected. They're available. One of the big things about it, and this is where it's kind of the hybrid thing, is they're available on desktop PowerPoint and PowerPoint Online, and desktop PowerPoint being Mac and Windows. I'm not really certain about if they're available in the mobile, you know, iOS or Android versions of Office. I haven't really used them or test them there, but I would imagine they would be because they're just an online little mini application. So there's some big differences in add-ins we've been talking about, and these new mini app add-ins, Microsoft is just starting to implement. I think they're going to make a big change in what's being used.
I've never used any, so that's interesting, Troy.
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's a lot of really good offerings out there, but...
Yeah, it's a bit of a desert, and kind of Microsoft doesn't really give it the love, I think, that it should.
I think it'll pick up steam. It's, you know, because it's not an installed thing, so suddenly you don't have to worry about, you know, add-in developers also have to be completely cognizant of the operating system. They have to be very aware of... of their coding environment, whether it be VBA or Visual. I just lost the name. .NET. These things are kind of neat. They're more web apps.
But it does, you know, the sort of this app store, it does allow a big company like a Shutterstock to really work directly with Microsoft, get their API, have it integrated in the program, and then start doing additional things. As I said, I was talking to them the other day. One of the things, for example, you can do with the Shutterstock plugin is it can be through the add-in store, it can be activated or sent out on an enterprise level. So if you have 1,000 employees, you know, with a, you know, just just say, give this add-in to all my 1,000 employees, and they instantly have access to the Shutterstock account. So, you know, that's a good thing, whereas other, you know, add-ins might be more complicated to implement on an enterprise level.
Well, what about, because the Shutterstock thing is a great example, what about corporations that do custom add-ins? Have you guys dealt with that at all?
It's a nightmare. No, and I haven't done it nearly to the extent of Echo, but the one time I did it, it was successful. Basically, you have to get buy-in from your IT department to push it out.
Yes.
And that's usually where it ends.
That's where it ends. And just the concept of introducing it to my marketing client, for example, I'll say, well, an add-in could do this and this and this and this, but that would involve licensing and your IT department pushing this out. And that's, it doesn't even get to IT. My clients are so intimidated by the concept of approaching IT that we get nowhere. And maybe that's a good thing.
Totally see that. Yes.
You know, but at the same time, I hear from some clients like, oh, I used to work at this company where we had all these custom macros and inserts and we could hit a button and it would, you know, do all these automatic things. I was like, yeah, that's great. Not going to happen in this new company. It's a big thing.
I mean, it really is. Actually, all three of us know several add-in developers where this is their primary focus. I mean, their real coding world is developing custom solutions for corporate level or enterprise level clients. I'm working with Echo Swinford right now on a large corporate client template rollout. TLC has developed a new master corporate template for a very large financial institute. It has taken almost 6 months to get the design design and styling approved through the many layers of committees. And now that that template is finally approved, Echo and a developer are creating a custom PowerPoint toolbar that will be installed through the IT. IT's already signed off on this, but IT will push out a custom toolbar. So when they open up PowerPoint, it'll have, their company name add-in as a tab. And it's going to do a lot of really amazing things because part of their styling, as example, is they have two different types of table format, visual styling to tables that do not exist in PowerPoint presets. I mean, you could do it, but you'd be manually formatting every single table a dozen ways. And this is a financial institute. There is a lot of tables. So there'll be two buttons on this add-in that basically take any table and they automatically apply all that styling. It'll get you probably all the way or 95% there. So then the end user just has to do a few little things. There's a lot of really, really cool. This one's going to be really cool. I'm really excited about this one. It's probably the most robust corporate level add-in that just does a lot of really cool stuff, but it's costly, very, very costly. And it's, for corporate clients, it's just an amazing result for document creation to be done by all of their users. But then when somebody leaves that company, you hear exactly what you're saying, Nolan, is at my last company, we had this button that would do this. I'm like, yeah, they spent a lot of money to get that button. And it was only customized to just their exact needs. It wasn't modifiable in any way.
So we've talked about a lot of specific ones, and we will definitely put all these links in the show notes. But any other ones, like sort of big ones we haven't covered?
Well, I think you mentioned PPT Extreme, which is they were my go-to add-in set for the long time. Well, they're still the benchmark for what productivity can be in add-ins. They are definitely more costly. And in the transition to the .pptx format, they actually kind of stopped working for a while. So I reluctantly found other add-ins to replace them. I know that there is a new updated suite of add-ins. I tested them. I was actually part of the beta test on them to make sure everything worked and provide some feedback. But, I now have a full design staff and I'm a bit more cost aware. If it was just my computer, I'd probably be running those in a heartbeat.
I used to use those for years. And they did sort of stop developing it for a while, but I actually wrote a review of the most recent release. I wasn't on the beta, but I wrote a review and it hasn't been published yet because I'm still waiting to hear back from them on a bug or two. I don't know, maybe I'll go ahead and publish it anyway. It's a pretty robust set of tools. I mean, they're like five or six sets. I'll just give you just one of those sets is a Photoshop import tool export that allows you, if this is your workflow, it's never been mine, but if you design your slides in layers and PowerPoint, it can actually import you know, with a touch of a button, all those individual layers into PowerPoint, and then can actually round trip it. So it's not something I use, but they can get fairly powerful.
These. You mean if you create it in layers in Photoshop, you can import it into PowerPoint. Okay. I think layers. We should publish your,
I'll just go ahead and put it up there.
Yeah. I know we didn't mention them just because they're not in my typical workflow. Actually, the Photoshop one is the only one I still maintain a license on because it's unbelievable, but they are probably, I would say, easily the benchmark for what productivity add-ins can be for PowerPoint and a designer.
And it's very, very slickly designed and they work. So we're good. They cost money.
We haven't covered the, and I can't remember if I added this in or if it came automatically with PowerPoint 2016, but it's the Acrobat tab, the Acrobat add-in.
That popped up for me the other day. Okay. What is it?
Well,
it only has one thing on it.
Well, no, multiple things. I can, you know, there are many ways to create a PDF now, but if you click on that tab, you can, in PowerPoint, you can create a PDF. You can create the PDF and attach it to an email directly from that tab. You can create it and send for commenting. So it, you know.
Okay. Yep. On the Mac, they gave us an Acrobat tab, but it only has one button, which is create PDF. So we don't have those others.
Okay. Well, the one that I'm most intrigued, well, there's a couple. There's the embed flash, which is interesting. And then create PDF and run action. I don't know what that means. I have to explore.
Interesting. Yeah. So maybe they're planning for a lot more stuff to come on that.
I can honestly say I pretty much ignore anything Acrobat in Office just because I found that they don't work that well together. So I'll have to maybe experiment and see, or you tell me what you find, and then I'll decide if I should spend my time there.
So Troy, when you send out PDFs for proofing, do you use the print driver?
I use the export. I use the Microsoft PDF engine, which you can get to like three different ways, which is, you know, you can do the file save as. If you click PDF, it uses it. File export does it. And then there's, isn't there an actual PDF?
Well, this print? Is the same thing. This is the same thing, but it's on a tab in PowerPoint.
Yeah. And I turned that tab off, so I can't even look at it right now.
Okay. I was just curious if you...
No, I have stuck with the Microsoft one because I found that it does the most compact files. It does the best gradients. It does the best layering. Acrobat just had too many problems with it. And
it's you're right.
Left my workflow. So maybe it's been improved and I should revisit it. But the workflow I've got, I'm quite happy with. I do a lot of really creative work of... I have a couple of blog posts about using... Acrobat Distiller, the full version. So I'll export a PowerPoint slide deck as single page PDFs. And then I'll re-PDF that using Acrobat Distiller to create a 2-up, a 3-up, a 12-up layout that's just kind of superior to the ones that are the PowerPoint native or Office native options. So you can do some creative stuff that way.
All right. Any other last tips for add-ins?
Well, I have several other add-ins installed on my computer, but they're not active in PowerPoint. I guess that's a good tip is that you can install add-ins, and every add-in you install, it's like having fonts on your computer. You know, you can have a collection of 6,000 fonts, and if you put them all active, your computer is going to run really slow because it's got to think through all of them or process them all to make them available. So I actually have a number of add-ins installed, but then I go into the, you know, the file options add-ins area, I think it is, and then I turn them off. So they don't load with PowerPoint, but they're available.
Which ones do you do that? Which ones?
Let's see, a few of them that I do would be PP Tools Fixed Links Pro. That is a great add-in. It's not needed as much because, you know, the ability to embed videos within the file itself, that didn't used to be the case, and this would solve a lot of issues. But I still use that on a number of occasions. I also use Shams Live Web. That's available. I can turn it on. Tushar makes a really cool one called Randomized Slideshow. So... you know, when you want to run like just a picture show of, you know, people at the, you know, the morning of event, instead of reordering them, you just click it and it, you know, it'll go slide one, then slide 12, and then slide 19, then slide two. It's a pretty cool little add-in. I just turn it on when needed, though, which isn't that often.
Okay, so does Shutterstock fall into that category? Because it's not always in the ribbon. It's, you have to go into insert.
Well, yeah, which with all the, that's because that's a Microsoft Store app, I guess. You have to first add it to your account.
Right.
And then to see it each time, it shows up under your My Add-in. So you have to go to My Add-in and select it.
Where the Picket add-in now has been added to my ribbon.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that would be the first.
Mysterious.
That would be like the first little mini app, as I call them, that is perpetually there. I will really have to look at that now.
I'm wondering if it's just not my custom library that it's having me access. I'm talking about Picket now.
I just haven't used it, so I'm not familiar. I will have to, let's figure that out.
We didn't mention it, but one of the good things about these Office apps are that it's tied to your account. So if you hop on somebody else's computer or you go to the web or whatever, you'll always have access to those add-ins. Whereas all the other add-ins we're talking about live locally on your computer.
Yeah, they're definitely only available. That's actually a funny thing about the QAT is that's why I said I have a new QAT that's downloadable on my blog. That's kind of like our public or our everyday use QAT, because you can add buttons to add-ins to your QAT. And when you install the custom QAT, it puts the buttons on the QAT, but they don't do anything because they're not linked to an actual add-in because it's not installed. That would be an interesting thing for some of these little, the new Office Store add-ins, if you can put a button to just automatically open it from there. In other words, avoid a few clicks. Productivity, all about productivity. Hey, I will say with the planning of this episode, because we knew we were going to talk about PowerPoint add-ins and this and that, so I had the PowerPoint blog this month is kind of focused on add-ins. So there's a lot of add-ins that we've talked about. I've got demos on there, links to their websites. There is nothing coming back to me. It's just something, a cool topic to put out there. So you can check out the PowerPointblog.com, and pretty much all of June is about add-ins. Okay, add-ins can help everyone become a power user in presentation design. Does not mean you become a great presentation designer, but it can make you a power user in getting that design work done. Some add-ins simply surface features and tools that are in PowerPoint, but they're just really hard to find or they're unknown. There are a lot of great options from a lot of very talented coders out there. And I can honestly say that without PowerPoint add-ins, I would not design as quickly, or often I create far more visually intricate designs just because add-ins make the process so much easier. So they're an important part of my design time in PowerPoint, definitely.
And I'll say that while the concept of add-ins can be challenging for corporations, I would encourage any presentationists listening to this podcast to give the lists that we're generating here a try.
And if you're on a Mac, just keep crossing your fingers one of these days.
Okay, so pro tips. Anything that's cool and exciting about presentation design or implementation is the section. And I'm going to kick it off because I remembered one I didn't talk about earlier. And this is a definite pro tip. Like, this isn't a general consumer one, but There's an add-in out there called Power Show, and it is, if you need it, it's invaluable. So what Power Show does is it allows you to have PowerPoint span multiple screens. So if you have a widescreen or a multi-screen display, but when you go into show mode, PowerPoint can only go on one of those monitors. You know, PowerPoint is locked to, when in slideshow mode, it's locked to a particular monitor. Power Show is kind of a virtual spanner, and it says, hey, PowerPoint should see these 2, 3, 4, 6 monitors all as one giant monitor. So it's a software-driven monitor. I can't think of the right term to use right now, as opposed to going into the graphics cards and, you know, telling it to merge everything into one giant monitor. So it is a really, really awesome add-in. It's a little costly, a couple $100, but if you're doing a multi-screen slideshow, it is definitely a tool to have available. I just used it. a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't used it for probably 6-8 months. We got there and we were running these Mac towers, and one of them just refused to let us join 5 monitors together to be one giant monitor so PowerPoint could span that width. The other one did seamlessly. It was, well, there's some problems with those towers, and the graphics chip that's in there is super powerful, but I don't think it has all of the back-end stuff put in because for whatever reason. And we're, you know, I literally spent more than half a day trying to get this thing to work. And so I finally just said, okay, we're going to install this add-in that I own, loaded it up on there, and we did a virtual blend. And it was awesome. It was seamless between the two. So it was really cool. So there's a pro tip. If you're doing multi-screen shows, look up PowerShow, have it available for that instance where it's needed.
Pro Show Producer, I think I mentioned it last time. It's moving from PowerPoint to Pro Show Producer is an easy video creation editing software. I found it with little or no training, I was able to create pretty great videos.
It's pretty powerful. I mean, it's really, really cool software.
Yeah, I like it. Doing.
And we've talked a lot about it, so not to belabor it, but my pro tip is the Shutterstock add-in for stock imagery that is available right now on the PC. And again, I'll have a blog post about that going up this week. Should be up by the time this is live.
Let's close here with our tech tips. I would like to remind everyone of the presentation summit is it October or November?
October.
It's not until October, but all three of us are presenting, and of course it's top of mind it's top of mind for us because we're participating, but it is the best presentation focused conference anywhere. The size is limited, so you need to sign up early to be there. I don't know. Are there any early registration deals out there yet?
I know I'm going to have one. We should get a code just for us.
We should.
We'll ask Rick, and we'll put that in the show notes.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And we'll mention it on the next topic, but usually you can get some money off with a code.
They mentioned the code.
So yeah, looking forward to that.
Okay.
My tech tip is Liquid web hosting. Now, I'm not a big web guy. I do have a couple websites. They're not the most amazing things in the world, but and I'm not a digital, you know, heavy into, you know, playing around with my hosting all the time, but this is who I use, and they are a little more expensive than your average host, but what is amazing about them is the customer service. And for me, that is paramount. All you need is one issue in your life from your web host to make you want to pay a little extra money to get appropriate service. And I had a problem with a discount provider a while back. That resulted in some lost emails, and that's, I said, never again. So Liquid Web is out there. They have 24/7 live phone support. You can get somebody on the phone within like 15 seconds from Michigan, and they will sit with you for as long as you need it. They'll walk you through it. They'll change your settings for you. The customer service, I have never seen anything like it. So if you're looking for a new web host, definitely go with Liquid Web.
That is awesome to hear. It really is, because I've been on the other end of that where things have not gone well in that black hole of web hosting.
Yeah.
What happened?
And especially when you are somebody like me who doesn't always understand what the DNS server is and what that this is and what the, what all these settings are. If you don't understand that, you really want somebody to explain it to you and in a lot of cases do it for you and hold your hand. So that's why they are my host of choice.
We'll add a link to them in the show notes. So for tech tips, I'm going to go gadget again, just because I love all of my gadgets. And I use this one extensively while traveling over the past few weeks with my wife. And it's really simple. It's a USB 5-port power adapter. So, you know, you have your iPhone and you have your iPad and you have your every other USB powered device. You know, I use Bose earbuds, noise-canceling earbuds, and they're USB charged as well. So, and traveling overseas, you got to carry a power adapter for everything. So instead, I have taken to carrying, it's just one little brick and it plugs in And it has 5 full power, which I don't know exactly what that means, 5 millivolts or something along those lines. But you can plug 5 USB devices into just one power outlet. So when we were overseas, it was great. You know, one power adapter, plug it in, and suddenly we could charge, you know, our phones, our iPads, and a couple other things that were needed. So it's just kind of a cool little gadget to carry around, have available. It goes with me wherever I'm traveling. Thanks for joining us. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio focused on presentation design. See more about us online at www.tlccreative.com and www.thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. You can find lots of goodies and free downloads there. And if you're interested in project design or training in data visualization or presentation, give me a call, drop me a line, and find out where I am at nolanhamescreative.com.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website at presentationwhiz.biz and my blog at pptwizblog. Or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For today's episode, show notes, links, and more, visit us at our website, thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website. If you like us, rate us and leave us a review on iTunes. It's always appreciated. You could contact us with show suggestions, questions for the host, or leave a comment at our podcast website. Look for new episodes every first and third Tuesday of each month.